Last June 14th, Pope Francis had an unusual meeting organized by the Dicastery for Culture and Education and the Dicastery for Communication. The meeting involved some 100 comedians and comics from 15 different countries. Among them, Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, Conan O'Brien, Jim Gaffigan, Chris Rock, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Whoopi Goldberg. Why, you may ask, does the Pope want to meet with comedians? Well, you'll have to ask him, although I can think of two reasons. First, he wants to acknowledge their contributions to the good of the world. He told them that when you manage to draw knowing smiles from the lips of even one spectator, you also make God smile. People tend to recognize singers and actors, but who recognizes comedians and comics? So I think that's important. But also, I think the Pope recognizes the influence that these people have, especially the ones with talk shows. Meeting with them means that they are talking about the Pope and the Church. They're talking about growing up Catholic or about religion. And they're doing so on their social media, on their TV platforms. And that means that their followers and viewers are also talking about these things. And for the rest of us, we must remember that laughter brings good health. Making people smile is always a good thing. The Pope referenced a prayer attributed to St. Thomas More that he says he prays every day. A prayer that we should all pray every day. Give me a sense of humor, Lord. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this is the Salt and Light Hour. Hello and welcome to an all-new Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro, and sitting here with me is Jillian Cantor. Once again, Jillian, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Deacon Pedro. Nobody says my name like you do. Like, no, I never come into a room and someone's like, Jillian Cantor. Nobody does that.
So ladies and gentlemen, Jillian Cantor.
Thank you.
It's a good name, Jillian Cantor. That's like a celebrity name.
Well, we can thank my husband for contributing to that.
So Jillian, how long have you been working on this radio program? I'm trying to figure this out with everybody.
Joseph was a youngin and he is turning 16 this year. So yeah. It's 14, 15 years.
I think you were on right from the beginning.
Yeah.
You've been doing Jillian has been learning things from her children for 16 years.
You would think I'd be better at this by now, but I'm still not.
People, our listeners. Okay, so listeners, write to us and tell Jillian that you really appreciate all her wonderful lessons, because I know I do. And the reason why I'm asking you, Jill, is because we've been doing the show for 15 years and we're not canceling the show, but we're thinking of, you know, exploring possibilities of maybe changing the format that may mean, you know, longer interviews or shorter interviews or more music or less segments or different segments, maybe more time for what I learned from my kids. So we've been asking our listeners to write to me, email pedro@slmedia.org, although a few people have reached out to me on social media. So that works as well. And maybe don't think so much about what you'd like to change or if you don't want to change something, but maybe is there something that you'd like to add to the show? You listen to the Salt and Light Hour and you wish like, oh, wow, I wish you had more prayer, or I wish we had more music, or I'd like to add a news segment or something. So
the possibilities are endless.
Don't suggest that you want to cancel what I learned from my kids.
Yeah. I mean, do that privately. I don't need to hear about that.
Because that's the best segment. So write to me. Yeah. What's my email, Pedro? Super easy. Pedro@slmedia.org. Pedro@slmedia.org. Or look for me on your socials. Is that how you say it? Your socials.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Jillian is not on socials. Anyway, Jill, Germaine's going to be with us today. He's going to be with us with two books, as he always does. One for the little ones and one for the not so little ones. So that's book ends with Germaine Bagnell in about 5 minutes. And then we're going to have you come back and tell us what you learned from your kids.
I wonder what I'll talk about. I'll get ready while Germaine talks.
Okay, so you have 15 minutes to figure out what you learned from your kids this month. And then, okay, so I know you know The Chosen. And I know that you know that I had a conversation with two of the writers from The Chosen, Ryan Swanson and Tyler Thompson, because you were there with me
Yes, sitting
when
in the background,
sitting in the
silently cheering,
background.
like
Yes,
crazy
exactly.
lunatic fan.
Yeah, so Ryan Swanson and Tyler Thompson, they co-write the show with the show creator Dallas Jenkins. And I've said this before that I think the real genius behind the series is the writing. There's lots of great things about the show, but it's the writing. And so I was thrilled to speak to the writers of this show, and I spoke to them for 30 minutes, Jill, as you know, because you were there cheering us on. Now we won't be able to listen to the whole interview or the whole conversation, but we're going to share a portion of that today with our listeners.
Great.
And the part that we're going to hear has a lot to do with how they develop some of the characters. So if you like some of those, they're not background characters because those are the central characters, but like Matthew and Gaius and Eden, they're going to talk to us a little bit about that. So that's coming up in our second half hour in about 25 minutes, a featured conversation with Ryan Swanson and Tyler Thompson, writers of The Chosen. And then I'm also very excited because we're going to meet probably the hottest, newest Christian artist out there. Have you ever heard of Seth Schlieder?
Yes,
I
my kids
knew.
sing his Counting Your Blessings or Counting My Blessings
Okay,
song over and
well,
over.
that's
It's
the
on repeat
song
in our house.
we're going to end the program with, Counting My Blessings. Okay, so Seth. He's the, I mean, a year ago, nobody knew who he was. We had him on the show because he's part of a ministry called Damascus, and we were featuring Damascus Worship, and he's their main worship leader. But this song, Counting My Blessings, has the video has like 5 million views on YouTube over in the last 10 months. But did you know that the Brazilian, it was recorded in Portuguese by a Brazilian singer, Isadora Pompeo, the Portuguese version. Do you know how many views that video has on YouTube?
Oh, are they surpassing the English?
Okay, it's 124 million.
Oh gosh. Okay, well, I'll tell my kids and we will do our best to pump up the English version.
No,
We'll
listen to
get
the Portuguese version. It's great. So Seth, and I thought you would know him because he just came off tour with Matt Maher. It's the first time that he'd been on any tours, and it's like his first tour was with Matt Maher. So he was very gracious to find a little bit of time to speak with me last week. And we're going to
Excellent.
bring that conversation with you today. So there you go. You can get your kids to
Okay.
gather around and listen to a featured conversation with Seth Schlieder on the Salt and Light Hour at the end of the program. If people are not going to be able to listen to it right now live, you can go to our website, slmedia.org, and or you can subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. So, Seth Schlieder, let's start with a song.
Excellent.
We're going to end with Counting My Blessings, so we're not going to start with Counting My Blessings. Instead, we're going to start with a single called Running Back to You by Seth Schlieder.
I was an orphan, defined by mistakes. Thought I was forsaken, that you gave up the chase. I went to the reaches to try and ease the ache. Turned my back on the one who kept calling my kept calling my name. Didn't matter where I was at, you just kept calling me back. Back to the table, back to my home, back to my father who never lost hope. For the first time in ages, I know what to do. If my arms wide open,
We're listening to Seth Schlieder with his single, Running Back to You, and we're going to be speaking with Seth Schlieder at the end of the program, so stay tuned. And now it's time for Book Ends with Jermaine Bagnell, who's dancing himself into the studio. It's good to see you, Jermaine. Welcome back to the program.
Always good to be back, especially when it's the summertime with summer reads.
I know, summer read. Okay, good. So we have some good summer reads suggestions today for the little ones and for the not so little ones.
Correct. So we'll start with the not so little ones.
Okay.
As we enter that time of year where kids have a bit more time on their hands and parents want to get some reading material.
Yeah.
We have a book by Katie Crowley.
Okay.
And it's called I Have a Friend in Heaven.
Oh, yeah.
And okay, this is a bit of a warning for anybody who has dogs.
Oh.
It deals with the death of her dog. Okay. And it's not summertime. Her dog's name is Christmas. The sweetest name ever. So sweet. So very sweet. So the whole premise of it, you know, it's young Katie talks about getting her first dog and growing up with her little dog Christmas, where she got the dog for, well, mm-hmm. Christmas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just what it is to grow up with a dog. And it's just so sweet and heartfelt. But then during the book, she talks about Christmas getting sick and passing away. And ultimately, it helps people understand and deal with grief with their mm-hmm. with their dogs. In her particular book, you know, Christmas goes up to heaven and he's with Jesus and he's this beautiful thing. If we want to get into the nitty gritty of the theology about that, we have competing thoughts on what animals get to heaven, but that's not the point of the book. The okay. point of the book is just to know that your little pet, your beautiful dog that's no longer with you has moved on to a better place. And the great thing about this is, like, you know, when kids get faced with death, oftentimes mm-hmm. it's their pet is the mm-hmm. first encounter mm-hmm. with death. So I think if anybody out there has a dog who's older, this might be the perfect book for their kid. And it's a great way to kind of spark discussion. And it's really for the younger ones, you know, maybe 10 and under.
Okay.
Yeah. But with that said, my wife read it several times over and she absolutely adored it. And she even read it to our dogs. She read it to our dogs just to let them know they're loved and they're
going to heaven.
Yeah, so it's really good. And there's a lot of feedback about how it really helped people, adults and children alike, cope with the grief of their pet. Growing up, did you have any pets and did you have to navigate that sort of thing?
A little bit, not as much. Our dog, our forever dog, died when I was 20 already. She lived a really long, she would live like 17 years.
Oh, wow.
But I think that those conversations need to be had about death and mm-hmm. dying, and a good mm-hmm. way to have them is, you know, surrounding the circumstances of a pet. Mm-hmm. So this might be a great little book for parents to begin to have, as you said, those conversations that are not always easy.
Absolutely. Even if you have a goldfish or a bird, this would be a great tool to have for the kids.
I love that. I Have a Friend in Heaven by Katie Crowley, and it's self-published, right?
Yes. And next up, for the older, it's Why We're Catholic by Trent Horn. He's a very well-known Catholic apologist with Catholic Answers, Council of Trent YouTube channel, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
I really, as a revert, I got to say, I really enjoyed this book.
Yeah.
Because he breaks down a lot of common reasons, common beliefs of the Catholic faith. And he does a bit of a dive where he shares his own personal story, and then he'll get into a little bit of the theology. So he covers anything of like why we believe in truth, science, God, marriage. Like, so it's a real full spectrum, full range of topics. Like, for example, one of the chapters that this obviously, as someone who's recently married, this one really spoke to me of why we defend marriage. And he kind of compares the two versions of it, like we as Catholics, how we understand it, and where the more secular version, in a courthouse and that sort of thing. And really getting into the nitty-gritty of the difference between contract versus covenant and what that means as Catholic married men, that sense of sacrifice, that sense of within the marital act, we're always open to life, that sort of stuff, versus within the contract, you might have people using some sort of birth control, that sort of thing. Just really showing the delineation in that particular topic. It was really interesting, because part of the way he was telling the stories, he brought it back to his own sort of conversion in high school and looked at his whys of becoming Catholic. And he became Catholic in high school because, one, he thought it was true, and then, two, finding answers to his deepest questions about existence and purpose made him happy. So this book really became a reflection of that. And I think this isn't just for converts or reverts. I really think this is for Catholics, period. It's not necessarily a book to turn you into an apologist, but it will help answer questions and help if when you engage in dialogue, or even maybe help, as Catholics, we are the billboard for our faith. So it may help be a better representation to the public facing, when we're in the sphere and being able to sort of have these conversations with people. It's really, really powerful book. I really got a lot out of
It
it.
sounds like it, and I agree. I think all Catholics, especially those of us that are cradle Catholics all our life, we take a lot of things for granted, and so many things that we do, we don't even know why we do them. So it's always good. I'm fascinated by stories, conversion stories, for that reason. But something like this, it's always good to read something that helps us understand, what is the Catholic Church? Why am I Catholic? And it's a good question for all of us to ask. Well, why am I Catholic? Is it just because I was born into a Catholic family, or because I really truly believe and accept what the Catholic Church teaches, and I've chosen to live my faith and follow Jesus Christ within the context of the Catholic Church? So that's a great suggestion. Why We're Catholic by Trent Horn, published by Catholic Answers Press, is
Yes, and for those who just want something on the go, it's also available on Audible, so you have options with that particular one.
Yeah, there you go. Audible, that's not my thing, but it might be somebody else's thing. They like to listen to the audiobook. Thank you. So I have A Friend in Heaven by Katie Crowley and Why We're Catholic by Trent Horn. Great summer suggestions for reading while you're sitting outside on the patio. Thank you, Jermaine.
My pleasure as always. Happy
And
reading, everybody.
yes, and have a great summer. We'll see you in the fall. Jermaine Bagnell is our book contributor, and he's the producer of the Salt and Light production, Working in Faith. You can watch that at slmedia.org, and you can follow him at Jermaine Bagnell.
Hi, I'm Rob Grassi, and you're listening to the Salt and Light Hour with Deacon Pedro.
You can watch Salt and Light Television on our streaming platform, SL Plus, Salt and Light Plus. You can find out how to subscribe at slmedia.org. And now it's time for What I Learned from My Kids with Jillian Cantor. Jillian, you had 15 minutes to figure it out.
Yeah, I wrote some notes down. Here we go.
Okay, here we go. What did you learn from your kids this month?
So it's come up as a question, I think, more than a lesson. And it just came through various scenarios and observations that have been thrown our way lately. And the question is, does sin make sin? How do we respond to other people's sin? the theme, the series of okay, questions
this is
that have been coming
like
up.
theologically profound, so I'm gonna sit back and listen.
So yeah, so it's just been coming from us, coming to us in a variety of ways, both grown-ups and kids, kind of observing, like, what do we do when we see or at the hands of someone else's sin? Uh-huh. And the observation overwhelmingly is that sin begets sin, which is sad, but also very true. And I guess you can see this through the easiest example, which is when a toddler, a little kid, hits another kid, what do they do?
Yeah.
Does that kid then pray over the first child who hit him? Unlikely. Do they sit and talk about their feelings? No. What does he do? He smacks them back.
Yeah.
So like somebody hits you, you hit him back. Somebody insults you, you call them a name. My dad, when I was growing up, my dad in our household called it maximum insult. Like my brother would insult me and I would come up with something even better. And then he would come up with something even better and I would trump him with what was the best. So yeah, maximum insult. So we're not being charitable. We are just diving deep into our sin.
Yeah.
It's really, creativity is endless. One person's sin inspires another. But it isn't just kids, right? Because adults struggle with this. We feel like someone else's sin can justify our own. So whether it's, you know, we knew that somebody was talking about us, well, we're going to talk about them. Somebody cuts us off in the parking lot, we are justified in yelling at them and shaking our fist at them. If somebody hurts us, then we are justified in our anger and our unforgiveness towards them. So overall, children, adults, everyone in between, sin begets sin. So what really got me first started, the first, I guess, incident that made me start thinking about this was, hello, my very own sin. And that was sitting at a baseball game of one of my kids, watching him play, and just listening to the other grown-ups sitting around me, just belittling the coaches, not like coaches on our team, coaches on their team, yelling at the kids, getting mad at the other parents, and just listening to this, and just slowly but surely my anger was rising. Like, I'm so frustrated with these people, and their anger towards other people and their judgment towards other people was inspiring my own anger and my own judgment towards them. And I was getting really worked up, like to the point where I'm like, I can't sit here anymore. I've got to go. When I got home, I realized I was still fuming, still angry. Like, what's their problem? Why do they act like this? But as I'm saying those things, I'm forming my own judgments on them and being just as harsh to them as they were to anyone else. So while I was musing over all of this, I felt this, I guess, you know, sometimes I say I started to think about, but what I really think in this moment, it was God telling me or asking me, well, what would have been a better way to respond to that person's sin? Like, you could see their anger, you could see their frustration. What should your response have been? Is it right to become angry? Is it right to be bitter? Is it right to make those judgments? Should someone else's sin be causing us to sin? Or should it be making us more empathetic? More than anything, someone else's sin should be causing me sorrow. Because we are all sinful people. We can commiserate with each other. Like, what is this doing to us? We understand anger. We understand hatred. We understand judgment because we all do it. And so instead of allowing it to build up in me, to allow their sin to inspire my sin, their sin should inspire some sorrow, some empathy, that I would be able to sit with them in their sinfulness, and not in a righteous way, not be like, oh yes, I've been through that myself, let me tell you how you should behave, but just in that I can respond to your sinfulness with kindness and gentleness that will change the course of what is happening, change the course of their anger, change the course of their attitude, even if it's just agreeing with them, like, oh yeah, that was a stinky call, can you believe that? And like, imagine that kid's probably stressed out, he's the ump, and like, just like being able to talk it through, to bring someone else to a place of like realization of what they're saying, or what, where is their source of anger coming from, right? So it's not, it's, we shouldn't make other people's sin shouldn't make us angry and cause us to sin ourselves, but it should light a fire in us to, I guess, to, I don't know, inspire some sort of kindness or other conversation, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
So thinking about all that, I was laughing because yesterday I was reading a devotional with one of my kids, and it was the message from the gospel about Jesus instructing us to turn the other cheek. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And feeling very convicted that that was God just confirming the messages, messaging that I had been trying to understand from him over the weeks prior, that this should be our response to sin. It's a refusal to participate in that sin. And it is the generosity of self that we don't turn and run, but that we stay there. We stay with that person in their sinfulness. And we together as sinful people, which are just the club of sinful people, we can rise above it together. So how do you respond to people's sin was the question. And the answer is, it should be with gentleness, kindness, empathy, and just rise above it.
Yeah, I love that because it happens to all of us several times a day.
yes, an hour.
Interesting because just having this conversation with you or listening to you, like if you're prepared, okay, I didn't react well that time, but next time, then you'll be prepared. So the next time when it happens, you might say something that kind of diffuses.
Diffusing the situation.
Diffusing it or distracting or refocusing. In a way. And I think that if we do it, like if you think about it, you prepare, then you do it. And then maybe you don't do it perfectly, but then the next time you will do it better and we will get better at it to the point that you will do it automatically without preparing. So I think that this is a really good lesson for all of us. To be ready, to be prepared, to respond in a certain way that diffuses or changes or refocuses, I think, the behavior.
I like to come up with the lesson and then I like to hear you make it more succinct and explain it better. So thank you.
Well, as I try to make sense of it for my own self. But as parents, we do it to our kids. Like how often do the kids do something and it just makes you angry and you just like, and you're like, but why is this making me angry? I'm the parent. I'm the authority. I should not be angry. And just like, and then you can help your kids refocus. And in doing that, you're also teaching them how to refocus. I keep saying refocus. I don't know if that's the right.
I mean, it's a good one. That's the takeaway from today.
The takeaway is refocus. Refocus the energy. Good lesson as we go into the summer.
Yep. I'm sure there'll be kids hitting kids over the summer. So we'll see what we can do with it.
Yes, and lots of baseball games in the summer.
And lots of opportunities to practice this.
So thank you for that that lesson today, Jillian. We'll see you in the fall and have a great summer of baseball games.
Thank you. I will. I do enjoy it. So have a great summer of your backyard and all the nature and hikes and all the good things.
Yes, all the good things that we do in the summer. Thank you. Jillian Cantor, always learning something from her kids. She's the wife of David and the mother of Joseph, Henry, Annie, Clara, Jane, and Leo. Coming up in our second half hour, a featured chat with two of the writers of The Chosen, Ryan Swanson and Tyler Thompson, and we meet singer-songwriter Seth Schlieder. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Salt and Light Hour, Part 2. I'm Deacon Pedro. The Chosen is the first ever multi-season TV series on the life of Christ. This groundbreaking historical drama tells the story through the eyes of those who knew Jesus, those chosen by him, sharing an authentic and intimate look at his life and teachings. The series is the largest fan-supported crowdfunded project of all time, and in the first three seasons, garnered over 500 million episode views worldwide. It has been said that the show's popularity is due to the fact that it shows a deeply human Jesus, although it shows a fully divine Jesus as well. But what's true is that the greatest story ever told has never been told this way, and the real genius behind the series is the writing. Recently, before the release of the fourth season, I had the chance to speak with two of the writers of the series who work with series creator Dallas Jenkins.
Ryan Swanson, and Tyler Thompson. Here is a portion of that conversation. We spoke about the writing process and about creating some of the characters like Eden, Gaius, Nathaniel, and Matthew.
Ryan and Tyler, it's so good to meet you. How did you start thinking, because I imagine you've mapped out the whole season, all the seasons, like which are the stories that we're going to tell and which characters do we have to develop or invent?
Yeah, I mean, we for each season, we'll identify what swath of the Gospels, what from here to here we want to cover. And then we look at what are the events within that. As you well know, not all the Gospels necessarily agree on certain chronology. So sometimes things fall outside of that zone, but we'll decide, hey, we'll pull that in. Or you know, there's two mass feedings, one 4,000, one 5,000. Why don't we just combine them into one? So things like that. So once we have all that in there, that helps us determine, okay, which characters are we going to need to investigate from their point of view or even invent, you know? We talk about, say, the character of Atticus, who is, you know, kind of a cipher, a way to, for the Roman Empire to explore what's going on, or someone like Shmuel, who's kind of an aggregate for the religious leaders or something like that. Sometimes we have to push a bunch of perspectives into a single character so that the audience just has one person to follow.
Like some characters like Eden, she's a main, I mean, she's almost like the protagonist in some ways.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not made up, but we know Peter was married. But that's a whole other story going on there. Tell me about Eden. How did you come up with Eden, or why?
But I mean, that's you've just distilled down our organizing principle, which is to find a passage in the Bible that suggests more.
Right.
So we know Peter's
mother-in-law
was healed. And so what does that mean? It means he had a wife. And it means that his wife was, and if the ministry largely took place early days at his house, this is somebody who would have had to contend with meetings. What could she have been like? Who could have put up with Peter? That's something we move through the gospel, we try to figure out, right? And so once we've taken that one piece of information that Peter's mother-in-law was healed, we then start to extrapolate backwards and we connect the dots. We don't want our characters to ever come off as plot bots or just, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Moving from place to place with no motivation, no fears, no desires of their own. And so, you know, Eden is a great example of a character we know had to exist, but, you know, who could she have been from the given facts that we have?
When you identify, let's say, those gospel moments that you'd like to highlight, do you encounter, and I imagine you do, because I think I do and everybody does, things that just don't make sense or that don't quite sit right, that help you? And I'm thinking about, you know, Simon having gambled away his house and his business and everything, and then all of a sudden that justifies the miraculous guy. Like, it makes it make sense. How did you come up with that, like, that idea or others like that one?
It's often a process of working backward from something that's already there in the text. So when Jesus says, let down your nets for another catch, and he says, Master, we toiled all night. Yeah. Full stop. Hold on. Why all night? What would could cause
that would not have been normal?
No, and I mean, who does that? And so, and you can tell from other suggestions in the text, there's a bit of desperation going on with him. And so, because he says, you don't know the things I've done. There's context clues, and then we can kind of work backward from that and kind of, not invent, but imagine, explore, infer what could plausibly have happened. So that's kind of how we got to something like that.
Yeah, or Nathaniel under the, is it Nathaniel under
yes.
the tree?
Yeah, under the tree.
That
yeah.
Jesus says to him, like, I saw you under the tree, and that means nothing to most people who read it.
Mm. Right.
But then all of a sudden, the chosen, it made perfect sense.
Yeah.
Was that a similar?
Yeah, that is a similar moment, because we know so little about Nathaniel. Cool. Why, among all the moments of Nathaniel's life, why would he have suggested, I knew you in that moment? And so we started to, you know, work backwards, and we work as a writing team. So with Dallas Jenkins, the three of us were sitting in a basement, and we were thinking about the character of Nathaniel. And Dallas had a personal story that he was drawing on to that moment. What was it? What was it, a moment for me where it would be reassuring to hear Jesus tell me I was there with you through that? And he drew on the moment of his own career when he had a feature film come out that didn't perform. And, you know, he was shortly thereafter, you know, God put it on his heart to just continue to bring in loaves and fish, that he had no, he never would have any control over the outcome. But in that moment, you know, that he was Nathaniel, as we saw him portrayed in The Chosen. And so we thought that could be a moment when all the noise, all of the, you know, when you take 12 men whose lives would have centered around Torah and around their faith, and the preachers would have come out of the woodwork at, around this time of Roman occupation, for one to stand out, yeah, for a man to say, hey, I know that you're somebody who tells no lies, and I saw you under the fig tree, that those moments would have had to connect deeply to something that, that had real meaning, and in this case, we chose a moment of despair for Nathaniel.
Do you find, and again, I don't think this is a contradiction, but sometimes Gospels will give you two completely different points of view. And I can think of the centurion. He's got a son in one Gospel. He's got a servant or a slave in the other. You were able to make sense of that. Tell me about that process.
Yeah, because probably both are true in some way. And so we found a way to make both true. I also, there's no use in creating division or controversy over something that in our minds, like, the message of that story isn't so much about the relationship, it's about that person's faith. Yeah. And so we try to like keep the main thing, and if there's a detail that various traditions or Gospels kind of quibble over, we try to never like center those, because that's not the point. This isn't a theological treatise, it's not an investigation, we're not doing that. There's plenty of people doing that, they're very good at it. We're just trying to tell an entertaining story on television that will, you know, help people relate to the stories of the people who encountered Christ. Mm-hmm. And so what the nature of the relationship is not that important to us. It's more about the faith of that centurion.
But it also, I mean, you didn't just tell the story of Gaius at that one moment. Mm. Gaius, we met him, you know, two seasons before.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that that's where you were ending, or did we just needed a centurion? Because that's an interesting character to, I mean, you already said that not to forward the story, the plot.
Yeah.
But like, did you think of Gaius because we needed a centurion whose son had to be healed?
There was a lot of work that went into Gaius and introducing
him. He's one of my favorite characters, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and that is the nature of ensemble TV, too, is that we've already got a cast of 12 characters who are following the life very closely of the famous 13th. And then we've got three women disciples, and then we've got two Pharisees whom we've gotten to know very well. And so you start to get to 20 and 25 characters. You know, not only is there something in efficiency in introducing the life of Gaius, but it also goes very closely to, it marries motif with function, because our idea that Jesus connected deeply with the people around him means that Gaius wouldn't have just been a bystander or throwaway. If Gaius was present for the miracles, signs, and wonders that Jesus' ministry gave the world, he would have been impacted. So why not go on a journey with him? His relationship with Matthew is something that we see continuing to evolve. His work with Simon last season was foundational in that, what you're talking about now, right? Because in the text, it also says that the disciples went to Jesus and said, this man helped rebuild our temple.
Yeah.
He's a good man. Yeah. Well, where would that have come from if not from rebuilding the cistern with Peter? And in the process of doing that, we also got to do quite a bit of heavy lifting with Simon's Ark last season.
Exactly.
So, you know, the nature of this ensemble television has us reusing characters, but, you know, we've put forethought into where each of these guys is going. And the stuff that you're seeing now with Gaius, with his son, that Tyler talked about mending two Gospels with different details, not different takes, different details.
And you don't have to tell us now, but I imagine that he could be the centurion at the foot of the cross who says, this truly was the Son of God. Maybe.
Got options.
I don't know. I do, but it would make sense because we've seen his journey. And like you said, there's no way that he would not have been impacted by, in some way,
that's right,
by Jesus, if that's where he was. Tell me about Matthew and how or why he developed the way he developed as someone with autism or on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, there are clues early on, you know, the fastidious attention to detail, the kind of obsession with numbers and genealogies and details that may seem not the most entertaining, but that would be relevant to someone maybe neuroatypical in one way or another. Dallas has some personal experience with autism within his own family, and so he has a keen eye for some of those things. But you know, neurodivergence or neuroatypical people have been with us forever, and so it doesn't matter, you know, what label you put on it. Like, we did want to make sure that all kinds of people see themselves represented in the show that maybe often don't. So many of similar types of shows revolving around Jesus and the disciples have a bunch of stock characters. It's like Peter and Judas, and then a bunch of flat, like, similar people. And we thought they should each have a unique perspective. And Matthew, more and more episode by episode, the deeper we got into the character, it just made so much sense. And it helps the audience, too, to have someone with a lot of questions and someone who will say what other people are thinking. Right. That helps us, that gives us space to say the things we're thinking.
Would you have started writing Matthew before you realized maybe we need to explore this a little, or you already knew?
It was in the first discussion, actually. Yeah.
Interesting.
That was a portion of a conversation I had with Ryan Swanson and Tyler Thompson. They are two of the writers of the hit TV series The Chosen. I spoke with them earlier this month. You can now watch the fourth season of The Chosen on The Chosen app and on their website, thechosen.tv. To listen to the rest of my conversation with Ryan and Tyler, watch Salt and Light Media's program Behold at slmedia.org/behold. And to listen to my conversation with The Chosen creator Dallas Jenkins, look for the Salt and Light Hour from February 2023 on our website, slmedia.org/podcast. Here now is Seth Schlieder with his single, Stay.
It's hard for me to admit it, but I'm not strong enough on my own. Wouldn't last but a minute, 'cause I'm not built to do this alone. And when you pull me close, it's like a light to my soul. Don't let me push you away, I need you. As long as you stay, I'm gonna be okay. The wind can blow, but I won't break. No matter the pain, you never run away. And there's no world where I'm not safe. As long as you stay, I'm gonna be okay. As long as you stay. You know I tend to wander, but all it takes is a whisper and you're back here. I want our hearts to be tethered, so there's no moment you're not near. And when you hold me close, it's like a
hey.
stay.
That was Seth Schlieder with his single, Stay. We met Seth Schlieder over a year ago when he joined our program to speak about Damascus, a Catholic missionary movement based in Ohio, and Damascus Worship, which is their worship team. Seth is their director of worship. I had heard of Seth before, but it's incredible how his career has skyrocketed in the last year with the success of his song, Counting My Blessings. The song was just getting traction in the United States when it flew to number one in Brazil on Spotify's Viral 50 Brazil playlist. Then the song was recorded in Portuguese, which garnered more than 70 million streams in less than 4 months. Seth is still with Damascus, but he just came off a tour with Matt Maher, and he just got married. And so I am very glad that he was able to take a little time to chat with me last week. Seth, it's so good to see you.
Me too.
To see you again, actually, because we did have you on the program, I think it was last year when we talked about your work with Damascus.
Yes. Yeah. So it's good to be back again.
Yeah. And you've been busy the last couple months. And I want to get to that in a bit, but I sort of would like to know a little bit more about you just growing up. Like, did you grow up in a Catholic family? Was it a musical household? What was the Schlieder household like to grow up in?
Yeah, both of my parents were involved in ministry pretty much my whole life. So working for dioceses or parishes or stuff like that. So grew up in a very ministry-oriented family, which is cool. Erie, Pennsylvania for 13 years and then moved to Toledo, Ohio. And so faith was definitely a big part of my whole upbringing. We'd pray together as a family every day, pray before meals, and pray every night. Like our prayer would kind of rotate between, you know, we would do Liturgy of the Hours, we do the Rosary, we would do worship music, like kind of the whole
spectrum. So that's hardcore. Yeah.
Which is really cool. You know, I feel like I got a very full picture of what it means to be Catholic, you know, and just the beautiful, rich traditions that we have in so many different respects. So my dad would play the guitar, play the piano, and he'd lead us in worship growing up. So I feel like I got, that's kind of where my first exposure to, you know, Christian music was. And listening to Rich Mullins and Matt Maher and, you know, all that kind of stuff was definitely a big part of growing up. So that was kind of a little bit of where I came from.
Yeah, absolutely. So a big family. Do you have any brothers, sisters?
Yeah. I'm one of six.
So wonderful.
Six. But you know, that's small comparison because my mom was one of 12. My dad was one of seven. So I have over 100 first cousins.
That's lovely.
Which is just insane.
Beautiful. So, and are you the only one that kind of went into the musical kind of?
Yeah. Yeah. None of the other ones really got the bug for it.
No.
So I have a sister who really likes musical theater. But none of the other ones have really done much with music outside of myself. So just had the bug for it and kept going with it. And here we are.
And did you, I mean, obviously you started playing guitar or piano. I think you play both, right? When you were younger, when did you start writing music?
Yeah. So I started taking piano lessons at 5. And so that's really when I started playing piano, picked up guitar in high school.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really until I came to Damascus right out of high school, which for anyone who doesn't know, it's a missionary community in Ohio.
Yeah.
So they have a 2-year missionary program. And it was really there where I started writing music. I was kind of leading worship and really began to kind of get a heart for just the people I was leading. And it was like, Lord, what do they need to hear? Lord, what do they need to sing? And that's kind of where the writing bug came from, which was cool.
And did you think, I mean, I don't know if that was before college or after college, but did you think I would like to go into ministry, or was that something that happened while you were experiencing Damascus?
Yeah, so I actually never ended up going to college. So I had a full ride to a university in Florida, Catholic University called Ave Maria.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had it all picked out, like all ready to go. I had a roommate picked out, all the things. And then I really just felt God say, like, hey, like, would you give it all up and follow me? You know, kind of like that moment of casting your nets and just like, all right, I'm gonna trade a really comfortable life in Florida for a missionary life in Ohio, you know? And so that's really kind of how I ended up there. And I, at that point, I knew I wanted to do ministry. Like I went there because I felt in high school, I really fell in love with the Lord and kind of was like, but I want to give my whole life in this way. You know, all of us are called to make our whole lives ministry, regardless of what we do, whether that's, you know, we're in the secular workforce or we're, you know, working for a church, like all of it's meant to bring people to Jesus ultimately. But I really felt a call in my life to very directly, you know, be involved in ministry from high school age, really.
had you experienced Damascus as a high school student?
I did. Yeah. I actually went to summer camps there. So in high school, I did 2 years of summer camp. And for me, it was really transformative to see young adults living, like they weren't much older than me, you know, they're college age people, and seeing them just like live out a vibrant, beautiful, fun, adventurous Catholic faith was something I really hadn't experienced in that way before. Mm. So it was just really powerful to be like, oh, that's what all this can look like. You know, like I actually like have people I can look up to and see like, that's, you know, that's a great role model to follow, which is really awesome.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned earlier that one of your, you know, role models, you were listening to Matt Maher when you were growing up.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us were. And now you were just touring with him.
Yeah. Crazy. It was wild. So we connected over social media and then hopped onto some phone calls and just kind of started talking. He had heard about me and other people were kind of, you know, telling him about me. He's like, hey, here's this Catholic artist in Nashville, you know, coming to town and stuff. So we connected, which is really cool. And he's just been an awesome, you know, older brother kind of figure.
Yeah.
I can kind of go to for questions and stuff and you know, just talk about things. And he ended up doing a feature on a version of Counting My Blessings that I released, mm-hmm. which is just the craziest. I remember listening to it and just crying. Cause I was like, this is so like, here's a song about blessings, about gratitude. And, you know, here's someone that I looked up my whole life singing on my song about gratitude. Like, it's just so crazy.
And yeah.
It was really just fun to be able to experience that together.
I know. Talk about blessings. What are you thinking now, or where are you kind of leaning towards now? You just had the touring experience. Did that bug bite you, or did you say, no, I'm going to go back to the studio, or do I need to go back into like leading worship ministry? I know you're starting a family too. So,
right. All of the above.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is the fun part about balancing it all, you know, about you got to say yes to some things, and every yes to one thing means probably a couple no to other things, you know? I'll be heading out, doing a bunch of random things over the summer, doing a little tour thing in the fall. And then also heading back at some point soon, probably to record some more music. And then obviously still involved with Damascus. So I'm still full-time. I have a team of, at this point, I think seven people under me. So I'm the director there of worship. So I get to kind of still run a team and do all that. And then, starting a family, which is just super exciting. Baby's due in December.
Oh,
and,
congratulations.
Thank you, man. So just excited. Yeah, lots of fun things. I'm really grateful for an amazing team on all fronts of it, obviously. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, my wife being the, you know, biggest part of my team and us being able to do this together. And then my team at Damascus, which really kind of allows me to kind of go do things in Nashville, and then my team in Nashville, which really allows me to kind of do things in with Damascus. It's kind of all works together, and the Lord's really set it up to be something that's fruitful for everyone involved. So I'm really grateful.
And I guess you're always writing music. You've been recording. Are you going to continue recording? There's more. I know that there's the EP that just came out. Is there something else in the works?
Yeah, totally. So it's funny because even all the songs in the EP, I wrote them like 2-3 years ago, which is just kind of really crazy.
Yeah.
But I wrote them and it was like, oh, we have these great songs. But at that point, I hadn't signed to a label yet. Mm. And so then I signed to the label and they're like, let's take all this music and release it. And in the meantime, I've been writing pretty consistently since then. So we have a lot of new, it was like so hard to pick just the next small batch of songs because it's like we have so many. But really excited about this next batch coming out. I feel like they're really fresh and really, really speak to kind of where I'm at in my season here and now, which is really fun.
Yeah, no, that's good. And I'm sure that you're, as you enter into, I mean, definitely a new season with marriage and family, that's also going to bring about a lot more fruitfulness in your music and your, I guess, your creative and spiritual life too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just inspiration from the present moment.
I know. Well, that's great. Hey, Seth, it's really good to connect with you finally.
And, yes.
And I look forward to more just great stuff from you and that you can make some time for us maybe next year and tell us how you're doing.
So love to, man. Thanks for all the work you're doing.
You too. And again, congratulations.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
You can learn more about Seth Schlieder at his website, sethschlieder.com. And it's Seth, S-E-P-H. Schlieder is spelled S-C-H-L-U-E-T-E-R. SethSchlieder.com. I'm going to put that link on our site so you can find it easily. And you can also find him on your social media and stream his music wherever you stream music. And if you want to listen to the interview again, go to our website, slmedia.org. Here now, to take us out, is Seth Schlieder with that number one hit song, Counting My Blessings.
It's like it was yesterday. I was praying for a miracle, scared to have a little hope. And now looking back today, seeing all the things you've done, I can't even add them up. 1, 2, 3, up to infinity. I'd run out of numbers before I could thank you for everything. God, I'm still counting my blessings, all that you've done in my life. I find Father on this side of heaven. I know that I'll run out of time, but I will keep counting my blessings, knowing I can't count that high.
We're listening to Seth Schlieder with his single Counting My Blessings, and that will take us to the end of the program today. Listen to the full program on our website, slmedia.org, or subscribe to the Salt and Light Hour Catholic podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. Remember that we're considering changing the format of the show, so please email me, pedro@slmedia.org, and tell us what you like and what you don't like, or if you would like us to add anything to the program. Today, let's continue to pray for peace in Ukraine and peace in the Holy Land. We should pray for good humor always. Let's also pray that we're better at responding to other people's sin. And let's pray that The Chosen continues to touch so many people. And don't forget to always be thankful for all the ways God has been good and faithful in your life. And always count your blessings. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this has been the Salt and Light Hour. I can't count that high.